Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Flea, Red Rocket, and The Tragedy of Macbeth. And as I'm saying it, it's so evocative. Hi, David, how are you?
Doing okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
I am fleeing the Red Rocket.
That's the idea. Okay, I knew you could make a sentence out of at least some of these movies.
Oh, no. We're fleeing the Tragedy of Macbeth. It's too good.
Yeah, I'm sure you could carry this on, and we could do permutations and variations and all kinds of Asians. However, the movies themselves don't have a whole lot in common, which is fine. We have a very varied week this week, and these are all movies which are out now and have come out recently, and which are all three of them actually worth seeing, although I think of varying quality. The one that to me is really the most interesting of the bunch is Flea, which is F-L-E-E. Not the little animal kind of flea, but flea like running away. And this is very definitely the story of a person who is running away. The main character is a man named Amin, and he fled a while back. He fled Afghanistan. He had to get out of Afghanistan. There was terrible trouble for himself and his family. And what the movie is basically telling in a long flashback is about his getting out of Afghanistan and then the odyssey that he had after that. And then we also touch on various things that happened to some of his family members, but mainly we are focused on this man named Amin. And what he does is, well, he gets out of Afghanistan and he ends up in Russia with some family members, and things are very, very, very difficult there, very hard, all kinds of awful things just after the fall of the Soviet Union. And eventually, and even when the movie begins, he has ended up in Scandinavia, he has ended up in Denmark, and that's very nice, but the whole movie is a story of how he got there and the various trials and travails and tribulations that he endured along the way, with again some various subplots involving family members of his. Now, this is all based on reality. All of this really happened. But what's really most unusual about Flea is that it is an animated film for the most part. They're calling it an animated documentary, and you could almost say that it is that. Now, this is not an unknown genre. Way back in 2008, there was a movie called Waltz with Bashir, which was about the 1982 invasion of Lebanon. And that was an animated movie, which at the very end burst into live action footage, which is very, very powerful. Waltz with Bashir is a sensational and important and original film, and I totally recommend it to people. There was also a movie back in 2016 called Tower, which was about a horrible mass shooting back in 1966 that took place in Texas. And Tower is another movie that combines animation with live action footage, but it's basically an animated film. So now we have Flea, which is also basically an animated film, although from time to time they're here, and it's throughout the movie, interspersed every now and again, is some live-action footage that shows some of the real places and just sort of environments and milieus where various parts of the odyssey of Amin took place. The animation of the film, unfortunately, is not interesting. It has the kind of very limited animation, very static, not much going on in the animation, the kind of thing that is associated with a lot of the Japanese anime films. The animation is not interesting, and I think that's the film's biggest flaw. If the animation were the old-style Disney animation, or even just some more interesting version of limited animation, I would think it was a much more interesting movie. However, the story and the voice performances are powerful enough that they really do carry things along. I felt very involved in the movie, and at the end of the movie, I felt really quite touched by the story. It's a very effective movie, a very good movie. My big complaint about it is that the animation is not interesting. Every once in a while, the animation lapses into a sort of expressionistic mode where things are vague and sketchy and black and white, and that at least provides some visual variety. But for the most part, the visual variety that we get comes from the live action footage, which is interspersed every now and then, and I think it's a very effective device. In any case, Flea is primarily an animated film, what we used to call an animated cartoon. It's a very serious movie and a very interesting movie, and certainly the animation makes it different from most of the other documentaries that are around and makes it very effective in its way. I should also mention that there's a very interesting subplot about our main character, Amin, being gay and being on the verge of getting married to his boyfriend and facing certain personal tensions there. He is conflicted as to whether he should carry on with the way things are right now with his current partner who he's engaged to and they're supposed to be married, or whether he should go back to America and pursue postdoctoral studies. He's a very brilliant person who's being solicited to do a postdoc at Princeton. So all of that is another sort of little subplot in the movie and lends the movie additional interest. It's a complex and interesting main character. It's a complex and highly suspenseful main story of the film, with some very harrowing episodes, especially involving some of his family members. Very real, overwhelmingly dangerous situations that the world is in. So I totally recommend Flea. It's a fascinating movie and very, very unusual in the world of documentary. Our next movie today, Red Rocket, is just so different and so interesting in totally different ways. This is a movie that was directed and co-written by Sean Baker. And Sean Baker seems to gravitate towards sort of stories with a tawdry side, stories with a sleazy dimension to them. I think he first really came on the scene with a movie called Tangerine a few years ago, and then he did a very fine film called The Florida Project. And they're both tremendously lively, tremendously visceral stories about, again, sort of scruffy characters involved in scruffy situations. And oh, he is back in that territory again with Red Rocket. It's a really entertaining film to watch and quite a remarkable picture in all kinds of ways. So here, our main character is a guy named Mikey. And he is played by Simon Rex. And interestingly, Simon Rex is an actor who's had a kind of up and down career over the years. For a while, he was a VJ on MTV. And for a while before that, he was a male model. And he's done this and he's done that in kind of different areas of showbiz. And then his career apparently sort of just disappeared for a while. Well, it is definitely back now because he's giving quite a remarkable performance in Red Rocket. Simon Rex plays Mikey. And Mikey is a porn star, basically. He is a man who has appeared in many a pornographic epic, and that has been his career, and that has been his life, and he is just maybe the sort of person who you might expect a porn star to be, except now, he is not only a porn star, he is a washed-up porn star. His career has faded. He doesn't seem to be making it in the porn industry anymore. So he goes back to his hometown in Texas. Now, as one may well imagine, his hometown in Texas is not a very adventurous place, and the folks down there don't really approve of porn stars, or pornography in general, for that matter. So he is facing some hostility, shall we say, from the people who he used to know. Moreover, he is just sort of on his own. He has been knocking around and doing different things over the years and being a porn star, and his connections in his hometown in Texas are sort of frayed. So the people who he has to sort of go toward are his ex-wife and his mother-in-law. And they don't like him very much. And they don't especially want him around. And yet there he is, and he sort of has to rely on them. So anyway, he manages to weasel his way, to worm his way back into their lives. And that's fine. And there's a lot of arguments and a lot of fighting and a lot of this and that. And he also makes friends with a young woman who works in a local donut shop. Her name is Strawberry. And so we have that as another very, very major plot in the movie. He's just sort of developing a relationship with Strawberry, figuring out what kind of a young woman she is. And she's just, again, a pretty ordinary person who just works in the local donut shop. But they develop their own relationship. So there we have it. We have Mikey, and we have his wife, Lexi, and we have his mother-in-law, Lil, and we have his new donut shop friend, Strawberry. And those are the main characters. There's a few other characters sort of around the edges of the story. Now, one of the fascinating things about this movie is I've mentioned Simon Rex, and he's sort of uneven career, and he's done different things, and he's never been a major actor, although this movie may turn him into one. But look up the other characters, the other people who play main characters. Look up Bree Elrod, who plays Lexi. Look up Brenda Deese, who plays Lil. Look up Susanna Son, who plays Strawberry, and you will see they have no credits or almost no credits. These are new people. These are people who have been discovered for this movie. And that is just so interesting. In other words, they are almost just sort of real, regular, ordinary, non-professional people being actors in this movie where they play real, ordinary, non-professional folks. This has a sort of a loose connection with the old practice of Italian neorealism way back in the 1950s, when you had the great fashion for having people who were non-professional actors playing ordinary people. In other words, ordinary people playing ordinary people. And we have something like that in Red Rocket. And one of the interesting things about this is that Sean Baker has gotten fascinating performances out of these people. They're not like the performances you see from real movie stars or even from real movie actors. They're like the performances you might expect if your own next-door neighbor or the person who lived in the apartment over you or somebody like that were to suddenly have a really major role in a movie. It's not, quote, good acting, unquote, but it's something different and more real than that. And that, I think, is the most fascinating thing about Red Rocket, are these performances. Simon Rex is really, really interesting. He does a terrific job with the major, the most important roles, and he brings tremendous energy to it. But the people playing those secondary roles are equally fascinating, and just you just can't take your eyes off them while they're on the screen. The movie as a whole has tremendous energy. That's its greatest selling point. If you want to see Red Rocket, get ready for some, as they say, adult material. But it's just a really interesting, energetic, and visually alive movie. There's something to look at every moment, and the performances are just fascinating. And our final movie today, The Tragedy of Macbeth. This is, yes, it is Shakespeare's play, William Shakespeare's, one of his greatest plays, Macbeth, now transposed to the screen. One of the interesting things about this movie is that it was made by a Coen brother. Joel and Ethan Coen brothers have been making movies together for decades. And now one Coen brother has made a movie on his own. A fascinating thing is the same thing has happened with another movie this season, I think a much worse movie, The Matrix Resurrections, which is the three previous Matrix movies were made by the Wachowskis, and now one Wachowski made that movie. The other Wachowski said, nah, not interested, don't want to do that. So Lana Wachowski made this new Matrix movie on her own. Now we have The Tragedy of Macbeth with one Coen brother making this movie on his own, Joel Coen. The reason apparently being that Ethan Coen just wasn't interested. Joel Coen was passionate about this movie, had wanted to do it for years. Ethan said, nah, not interested. So after all these years, we get one Coen brother making a movie on his own. So how did it come out? Well, it's pretty good. The Coen brothers as a team, to me, they have always had an uneven track record. They have made some sensational movies, movies that are, or at least are close to being, masterpieces over the years, all the way from Blood Simple to No Country for Old Men to Fargo, really remarkable films. And they've made some stinkers along the way, too. So how is The Tragedy of Macbeth? How does Joel Coen do on his own? It's a really, really good and serious movie. I just can't quite call it an excellent movie. For me, it's not a masterpiece. Now, one of the fascinating things about The Tragedy of Macbeth is the casting, which is, shall we say, a racially mixed casting, and in very interesting ways. Denzel Washington, one of the greatest actors who we have on the scene today, is wonderful as Macbeth. Frances McDormand, a wonderful actor who happens to be married to Joel Coen for a very long time now, plays Lady Macbeth. And those are the performances that really carry the movie. And they are both really, really excellent without, to my mind, being brilliant. They're fine performances, but not the kind of performances that you would expect in a masterpiece. There's also some wonderful people in secondary roles. I'll mention especially Brendan Gleeson as Duncan, Corey Hawkins as Macduff. These are just fine, fine actors. But the main people are Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand as Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. And they're both really, really good without bringing some sort of new transcendence to the film. Now, the movie itself is done in a very unusual sort of stylized fashion. At times, it recalls the old German expressionist movies. A friend of mine says he was reminded of Ingmar Bergman. Well, a little bit this, a little bit that, yes. But it's definitely stylized. It's sort of graphically interesting. It's very stark, very minimalist. And that makes it different from earlier Macbeth adaptations that we've had. And there have been some great ones. Orson Welles did a very good adaptation of Macbeth a few decades ago. Roman Polanski did a wonderful adaptation of Macbeth. And this new Joel Coen Macbeth, it's good, but without quite eclipsing the memory of those excellent Macbeths. So if you're interested in Shakespeare films, by all means, check this out. It's not one of the very, very best ones ever made, but it's a very, very good one. And if you want to see Denzel Washington, the great Denzel, do something different from anything he's ever done before, I don't think he's at his best in this movie, but he brings a fascinating touch to it. And it's just wonderful to see the kind of way that this movie transcends our ordinary conceptions of casting Shakespeare, of casting movies, of the way race fits into today's movie scene, which is so much on our minds. It's just an interesting movie from all those points of view. And it's an interesting movie to look at, if not a brilliant movie to look at. So The Tragedy of Macbeth, one of the better Shakespeare adaptations, not one of the best Shakespeare adaptations, but definitely worth the attention of any serious moviegoer. And that is my somewhat variegated story this week, Jill.
And we just really appreciate, you know, words like variegate. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Flea, Red Rocket, and The Tragedy of Macbeth.